Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Sabbatonian Congregation, now that the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is October the 3rd, 2024. I was Bull 1 at 2028. This is the New Moon Sabbath. And we're going to start this service. It's now part 4 of Necessity for the Sealing. And I'll be 11 symbolic code number 7. We're going to finish this service off. It says we're on page 17. This will be part 5 of this series of studies that we're having. Okay, it says, for the implication here is that there are briars and thorns, and that if they should be set against him in the battle, they would be destroyed together. For the briars and the thorns must represent people who fight against Yahweh by the fighting against his truth. Okay. So this scripture says that those who fight against him, Yahweh, will surely perish together. But he who takes hold of the Yahweh's strength for peace and will receive peace. In other words, the briars and thorns need not remain such in this case, for they can be converted if they would. These are verses that therefore clarify present as choice. If there is offered unto a people the choice to take a hold of the Yahweh and live or battle against him and perish, that choice must be coming unto them in a message and the present truth. For if they take his truth, then they would be taking hold of his strength. And those who choose to fight against the truth will not win, but will perish together. Anciently, Yahweh was furious with the people and was tempted to cast them away forever, root and branch. But there he says that fury is not in me. He is long-suffering toward his people, and he is anxious that all should take a hold of his strength and be at peace with him. That very choice is found in the message that we bear today, as the message makes its way through the ranks of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Now this is Leite Howard talking to the Mother Church as the Shepherd Rod, the leader. We see some take a hold of his strength and rejoice in the truth of the rod. Micah 6:9. Hear ye the rod and who hath appointed. And we also painfully see the briars and the thorns sit in battle array against the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Though fury is not in the Yahweh, and though he is not willing that any should perish, yet he declares that those who will not take a hold of his strength, the accepting of his truth, must lose out. Isaiah 27:6. For he shall cause them that come of the Jacob to take root. Israel shall blossom and bud and fill the face of the world with fruit. Okay. Those that come of the Jacob and will take root. For this implies that not all are coming, but those that do come will take root, for the others will die. Those that take root are of the Jacob. We all know that the scriptures say that the 144,000 are all of the Jacob, for they are Israelites. The verse we are now studying says that those that come of the Jacob shall take root, and Israel shall blossom and grow, and fill the face of the world with fruit. These words are so plain, they do not need interpretation. Using the analogy that an apple tree bears apples, and not plums or something else. We may draw the lesson that the Israelites that take root are the 144,000 and will bring forth converts unto Israel. These converts will be Israelites either by the birth or by the being grafted in, as Paul describes in Romans 11. We have learned so far in our study of this chapter that when the briars and thorns fight against Yahweh, it is at that time that those of Jacob shall take root. That could not be after the close of the probation. But it is after they take root that they fill the face of the world with the fruit. Daniel tells us in the second chapter that in the days of the ten-toed kings, and those are Arab, those are Muslims, they're the Palestinian people that are recognized as these ten kings in this time of the ten-toed kingdom of Daniel 2:44-45. It talks about the everlasting kingdom set up in the time of these ten-toed kings and the 12th parabolic hour. For yes, Yahweh was set up a kingdom, which he said was represented by the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that stone would break in pieces all other kingdoms and grow to be a great mountain that would fill the whole earth. For the Daniel and the reality said the same thing that Isaiah is saying in the 27th chapter we are considering today. It is those of the Jacob that take root that make up the stone that Daniel saw. And as the stone is small and the mountain large, it shows that the majority will not take a hold of the strength of the Yahweh, that will perish while the minority will escape and take root and bring in converts that will fill the face of the world with the fruit. What Isaiah calls a vineyard, Daniel called a kingdom, the kingdom of the Yahweh. Isaiah 27:7-8. Hath he smitten him the smoke of those that smote him? Okay. Or is he a slain according unto the slaughter of them that are slain by him? And in the measure, when it shooteth forth, thou wilt debate with it. He stayeth his rough wind in the day of the east wind. There are two winds mentioned here, the rough wind and the east wind. At the time when the Yahweh delivers a message of the choice unto his people to separate those who make peace with him and those who do not, and at the time his vineyard shoots forth. There are two winds, the rough wind, we understand to be the Yahweh's wind, which he stops in the day of the east wind. Okay. Isaiah 27:9. By this, therefore, shall the iniquity of Jacob be purged, and this is all the fruit to take away his sin, when he maketh all the stones of the altar as the chalk stones that are beaten and sundered. The groves and images shall not stand up. For the rough wind comes to purify his church. When it blows, the fruit will fall. And the words of the Ezekiel, those who do not sigh and cry for the abomination done in the church, will be slain. And only those who take hold of Yahweh's strength will remain. If all of the stones of the altar become as chalk stones, then the altar will crumble to the ground. For the altar is not the entire church, but it is a very important part of the church. It is from the altar that the laity are led. For the figure used here shows that there is a false leadership, and it is to be brought down. The groves and images will not stand up, showing that idolatry is among Yahweh's people, and it too will be taken away. It is this purging that must come to order in order to make the vineyard rich and productive, as the verses 2 and 3 describe it as being. For the briars and the thorns must be removed. For the message comes preceding this separation, in order for the preparing of Yahweh's people, and for the escaping of the purging of rough wind, and to be safe from the time of the trouble represented by the east wind. Okay. Isaiah 27:10-11. Yet the defense city shall be desolate, and the habitation forsaken, and left like a wilderness. There shall the calf feed, And there shall he lie down and consume the branches thereof. When the boughs thereof are withered, they shall be broken off, the women come, and set them on fire, for it is a people of no understanding. Therefore he that made them will not have mercy on them, and he that formed them will show them no favor. So this chapter first describes Yahweh's vineyard in its beautiful and excellent condition, representing Yahweh's church in its future purified state. The verses we are now reading describe the present condition of his church before it is purified. How vastly different is the picture, Father John described it as being wretched and about to be spewed out. When a man prunes his orchard and he finds dead branches on the tree, he breaks them off and stuffs them in piles for someone to burn. For they are useless. It is this illustration Isaiah is using to show what Yahweh is to do with his people who are represented by the dead branches. People who have no understanding. They are those who are ever learning, but never come to the knowledge of the truth. Yes, they are branches of the tree, but they are void of the spiritual life. There is something fundamentally wrong with this class of the people, because Yahweh is able to make anyone wise. He can make anyone strong, for his truth is too, it's simple, that though they be fools, they need not err therein. Isaiah 35:8. Therefore all can get understanding. For this reason, those men who get no understanding, Yahweh will destroy without the mercy. In this work of the separating, Yahweh keeps the trunk and destroys the branches, Isaiah 27:12-13. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Yeshua, this is the son of Yahweh, shall beat off from the channel of the river unto the stream of Egypt, and you shall be gathered one by one, O you children of Israel. And it shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and they shall come, which were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and the outcast in the land of the Egypt, and shall worship the Yahshua in the holy mount of Jerusalem. For the children of Israel are to be gathered, first one by one, and in that day, the great tumult, or the great trumpet, will be sounded for the signalizing of the commencement of the ingetting of the people who are going to worship in the holy mountain, Jerusalem. In our studies on Isaiah 19, we found that there are to be five cities in Egypt that will speak the language of Canaan, and that there is to be a highway between Assyria and Egypt, and Israel is to be a third with them, even a blessing in the midst of the land. It is the great trumpet of the 27th chapter that will save them. For it may be that there will be many from Assyria and Egypt that will join the 144,000 and go to worship the Yahshua in the Holy Mount at Jerusalem. See Isaiah, or since Isaiah says that they were ready to perish, it may happen just at the making up of the image of the beast, or just in the time of the transition, when the world emerges from the Assyrian period and enters into the period when the Babylon the Great rules. For this one chapter is made up of only 13 verses, yet it outlines for us truly the whole message. Truly Yahweh has graciously given us a truth that no others have, that however puts a great burden of a great responsibility upon us. When the volume 1 of the Shepherd Rod came, we saw that the message had to be carried to the church and the light we have received from the Yahweh through this chapter is to help us to understand what the Yahweh expects of us and the magnitude of the work that is to be done, not only in the church but also in the world. We are to be wise and of an understanding heart in the things of the Yahweh. We ought daily to be living the truth and making every effort to be at peace with the Yahweh, that we may receive the seal of His protection and approval. Are we getting ready for the great and dreadful days just ahead? We have not a moment to lose if we would be ready on time. All Yahweh is waiting for now is for His saints to receive the real or the seal, so that His church will not perish from off the earth forever, but will instead take root and fill the face of the world with fruit. Okay, that's the end of 11 Symbolic Code, number 7, part 5 of this series of studies of this necessity for the sealing. Okay, let us now go to 11 Symbolic Code, number 4. And the name of that code is entitled, How Important This time. Okay. For the sermon which was selected for this issue of the Symbolic Code, this one Brother Victor Hollop delivered May 27, 1946. It is especially timely now, as we have already launched into a new year. And it may serve as a guiding thought for the children of the light who are not in the darkness, as for the lateness and importance of the time in which we now live. So the prayer thought says, there's something strange and new. These words fall upon the ears of the wandering multitude. Such teaching is a contrary unto all they have ever heard. From the priest or rabbi, they see in it nothing to flatter their pride or to feed their ambitious hope, but there is about this new teacher a power that holds them spellbound. The sweetness of the divine love flows from his very presence as a fragrance from a flower. His words fall like the rain upon the mown grass, as a shower that waters the earth. All feel instinctively that here is one who reads the secrets of the soul, yet who comes near unto them with a tender compassion, for their hearts open unto him, and as they listen, the Holy Spirit unfolds unto them something of the meaning of that lesson, which humanity in all ages so needs to learn. Mount of Blessing, page 17, 18, by Ellen G. White. We see by this that everything strange is not always wrong to teach, for the Jews in this time had not learned the things humanity needed then to learn. Let us pray that this afternoon we may learn more about the things we need to learn. Ecclesiastes 9, 10 and 11. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom, in the graves, whither thou goest. How they turn in sorrow under the sun, that the race is not to the swift, not the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to the men of understanding, nor yet favor unto men of skill, but time and choice happeneth unto them all. Whatsoever duty we are called upon to perform, we must do it diligently with 100% of our might in order to get it done right and on time. All of you have heard it said many times that if a thing is worth doing at all, it is worth doing it right. Still, even though it be done perfectly, if it is done late, it may never be of any value, and what we leave undone will be undone forever, so far as we are concerned. So it says that Ecclesiastes 9:11, I'll return and sow under the sun, that the race is not for the swift, nor the battle for the strong, neither yet bread for the wise, nor yet riches for men of the understanding, nor yet favor for the men of skill, but time and chance happeneth unto them all. Everyone has the time. Everyone has the chance. For the winner of the race is not victorious simply because he was born to be swift, but it is because of the meeting of the time and chance in his life. No, it was not just natural for him to win the race. In order for him to win, the first had to spend the necessary time to to fit himself for the race, and then the chance to run a 10th. For the same principle holds true in every field of the endeavor. One must first study to fit himself for the duty, while he has the time in which to do it, and then comes his opportunity for the demonstrating or use what he has learned. For the successful man then makes good use of his time and then watches and awaits himself of his opportunity to serve when it presents itself. For the instant, Abraham Lincoln, in his spare time, learned to be president of this country, and so when his chance came, he was ready to fill the office admirably. To make a success in anything, one must start out by the mastering the most elementary fundamentals and then keep on progressing in the advancement step by step. Honest men who gain wealth do not do it because they naturally knew a great deal or were naturally skillful. It was because they used well their time and their chance, for they too had put forth the necessary effort to equip and train themselves to be successful when their chance came. Those who do not make profitable use of their time cannot possibly live successfully. Nobody can tell just what electricity is, and what about time? What is time? Nobody here knows. In the beginning, the evening and the morning were the first day. Day is a measurement of time, and Yahweh created it. For the day, as you know, is composed of the 24 hours. An hour being merely a shorter measurement of the time. Since the earth can measure but 24 hours each time it turns on its axis, the earth then has as its only means of the time measurement its rotation on its axis, and the circuit through its orbit. Do you realize that were it not for this, we would be without time? Instead, it would be eternity. Therefore, eternity has no time. Time is manufactured. Daniel refers to time, times, and half the time, which explains what time is. It is a span measured by the completion of a full round of the earth and its orbit. That is one time. The repetition of it makes times. Then what is this eternity? It has no measurement, for it is never to repeat itself, like the years do. For the time is given us that we may know what part of the eternity man has existed on this earth. Which do you think is the most important, time or eternity? Time is everything, for without it, there is no eternity. Still, eternity is not time because it cannot be measured. Time saved is even more important than money saved, for you cannot save money if you do not save time. If the earth through its constant movement and change of the location in the universe represents time, then everything might represent time. Plants represent time, for you can tell by its size how old a plant is. In another form, human beings represent time. Trees represents time by their growth. The Bible represents time, for it took time for man to live the history of his record, to write it, to print it, to manufacture the paper on which it is printed, and the machinery that prints it, to grow and process the material for its cover. It all represents time, for the workman wages represent time paid in the money, neither gold or diamonds are obtained without the representation of the time that the elements being present both in the commodities themselves and again in the money that people give and their exchange for them. Through this discussion, you can see that time is vitally connected with the material, though it is invisible. It is far more important to save time, for time is priceless. It is just like the salvation. But the sad fact is that few people realize how valuable time is. And if you the great value of the time, what sin it must be to waste it, yet under all are given the time and chance. In the 100 years, there are about 36,500 days. In a general sense, that amount is, in the terms of dollars, is not much. For today, money is measured by the billions of dollars. But a person's lifetime is in the reality very short and composed of the three periods, for the childhood, prime, and old age. It is actually in the prime period of the life that man is most productive, and since it is but a part of the lifetime, he should never waste a minute of that time. We should see that we get 100% value out of every minute we live. To accomplish this, we must conserve our energy by eliminating useless and unnecessary effort. In that way, our endurance is lengthen, and we can actually accomplish more, since it's due to take time and effort to talk. For instance, we should avoid a useless talk and learn to make every word count for the good only. Lost time can never be recovered, regardless how we wasted it. It is gone for eternity. Therefore, how valuable time is. It says that we should perhaps ask ourselves this question most often than any other. Am I doing something now that I may regret in eternity? And if we are, we should at once set about to substitute worthy purposes, pursuits for the useless or worthless one. For the Christian's great duty is for the accomplishing of the things that Yahweh wants done. Doing that makes us rich in one way or another. Second, amen. Then rob us. Yahweh will reimburse us. Really, no one can cheat us if we engage ourselves in the doing the things Yahweh wants done. But the man who tends only his own interest never actually gets very far, especially when his accomplishments are evaluated in the light of the eternity. And there is no time for to the good of a man can do if he does not care who gets the credit. For the chance is what brings us eternity. It says, therefore, if we make use of the time and chance, we do not have to worry about eternity. Are you personally aware that time and chance are given unto each of us? If we would be successful now and in the hereafter, we must as judiciously invest our time as we would our money. Are you a time spend a thrift or a time a wizard? Are you just existing, or are you preparing for your great chance? But each must answer this question for himself. Soon that great chance will come to every soul, and when it comes, it will prove the faithfulness or the unfaithfulness of a stewardship over the time that was given us to prepare for it. As you stand now, are you ready? Our time belongs to Yahweh. Every moment is His, and we are under the most solemn obligation to improve it to His glory. Of no talent He has given will be He require a more strict accounting of our time. We shall individually be held responsible for doing one job less than we have ability to do. For the Asherah measures with the exactness every possibility for the service. The unused capabilities are as much brought into the account as are those that are improved, for all that we might become through the right use of our talent, Yahweh holds us responsible. We shall be judged according unto what we ought to have done, but did not accomplish, because we did not use our powers to glorify the Yahweh. Even if we do not lose our souls, we shall realize in the eternity the result of our unused talent. For all the knowledge and ability that we might have gained and did not, there will be an eternal loss. Whatever the line of work in which we engage, the word of the Yahweh teaches us to be not slothful and bitter, fervent in spirit, serving the Yahshua. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, knowing that of the Yahshua we shall receive the reward of the inheritance. for you serve the Yeshua. And that's taken from Christ's object, that's the energy of what? Page 363. And the day that we must account for our stewardship, we will be able to give a good account of every other talent entrusted unto us if we can show that we have made the most profitable use of our time. That is not how important time is. May the Yahweh help each of us to be wise time and investors. Alright, that ends Living Symbolic Code number 4. Let's back up now to Living Symbolic Code number 3 and finish out the last 15 minutes of our sermon. What price for the extra oil? That's the title of this subject. It says, at the very time that the signs of the times are being fulfilled. This is Living Symbolic Code number 3. We're on page number 4. Around us, men will be putting rotten timber into their characters instead of improving themselves. Why? Because Satan needs them as his agent. How long will they continue in their evil course? For a short time, and then it will all be brought to view. For this reading says it is a man of intelligence who are engaged in the Yahweh's service that will be putting the rotten timber into their characters. For this should be a great warning unto us, for right now is the time the servant of the Yahweh is talking about. Let us not play the fool. Matthew 24:45-51. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in the due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, Yahshua, that servant, shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and upon him his portion with the hypocrite. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Two types of the servants are here described. And this prophecy, as I pointed out before, in other sermons, in the time past, that these two servants are brought out in Matthew 24:45-47. Or actually 41-47. It's the antitypical Esau and Jacob from 1970 to 2003. This is where this prophecy fell into line. For the servant is the ministry. Those appointed to rule over the household. The church. So in 1970, Brother Johnson was the ministry that was appointed to rule over Gilead Center for 33 and a half years, from 1970 to 2003. Yahweh's servants, the ministry, are to give meat in the due season, present truth, truth which is applicable for the time and in which we are now living, not in 1844. Present truth from 1844 to our time was not the institution of the Sabbath or the state of the dead, for they have been truths since the beginning. True, they had been lost sight of, for the knowledge that since 1844 the judgment of the dead has been in the progress in the heavenly sanctuary is what has constituted present truth since 1844. We were made to understand what was going on in our time. But when the judgment for the living is about to commence, then the judgment for the dead is no longer present truth. And that was 2002. The sheriff came to the threshold of the house at Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center, where Rhoda Johnson, the ancient man before the house, Ezekiel 9:6 and 1 Peter 4:17, he was the first one that was marked unworthy and judged to start the judgment of the living and the opening of the seventh seal and closing out the sixth seal and the sixth trumpet. But when the judgment for the living is about to commence, then the judgment for the dead is no longer present truth. And so Brother Johnson, he had less period of time for the during the judgment for the dead, and he closed out that time in 2003 for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. For the present truth comes only from the Yahweh. Man does not know the season, and therefore Yahweh himself must appoint the time for the present truth to be revealed. There is a special blessing promised unto those whom he finds giving meat in the due season. For what was meat in the due season in 1844? Most likely would not be meat in the due season in 1944. If we do not desire meat in the due season, however, he does not give it unto us. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. Well, this is who we are. We're that wise servant that accepted the present truth. It's come to Texas 2002 and 2003, and Yahshua was there in person to pass the keys to the kingdom on from antitypical Esau to antitypical Jacob. This is speaking of him who faithfully gives meat in the due season. The goods is the present truth. We are told in the Malachi that before the great and terrible day of the Yahshua, Elijah is to come. Then when Elijah appears, his message will be present truth. He is to warn and prepare Yahweh's people for the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. I'll go back to the Father on this one here. It's the same as the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, the Son, and the Father as well. Unto, to be sure, his message will be present truth before the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, as much as the Noah's message was present truth before the flood. It really will mean the difference between life and death unto Yahweh's people, unto whom it is delivered today, as the Noah's message meant life or death for the people in his day. For the verses we have been studying this afternoon show that there are two classes of the servant, the faithful and the unfaithful. Matthew 24:48-51. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Yahshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Coming, it would, if the servant says, my master delayeth his coming, it would indicate that he had expected the coming of the Yahshua to occur sooner. for the early pioneers among us as the Adventists looked for his imminent coming, but now the banners we use to see in our churches foretelling his coming in this generation are disappearing. And moreover, we as a people are enjoined to follow a restrained diet, or a restricted diet. And because Yeshua has not come, many are eating and drinking with the drunken. Yeshua comes as such a servant, in an hour he does not expect them. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins. Matthew 25:1-13. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps, and went forth for the meeting of the bridegroom, and 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. For they that were foolish took their lamps, and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us up your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, there shall be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather unto them that sell and buy for yourself. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgin, saying, Master, Master, open unto us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Here is represented a church which believes that the bridegroom is coming. The Kermit Gilead Center, they were this church, because all the churches before Gilead Center 1970 that was of the Adventist movement, they quit looking forward to this bridegroom coming and going into the marriage supper. He believes in the second coming of Yahshua. In other words, here is represented a church, Gilead Center, typical Esau, Kermit, Texas, 1970, just 2003, which believes that the bridegroom is coming. And they did. Brother Johnson taught that and believed in that. Believes in the second coming of Yahshua. In 1844, the 10 virgins went into their place of the waiting for his coming, 5 of whom took no oil with them, while the other 5 took extra oil with them. For the lamps aptly symbolize the heart, and it is one belief in the truth that lights up the heart. Yes, it is the truth which must be indicted by the Holy Spirit that gives light. For the message which was meet in the due season in 1844 was the true Sister White brought of the judgment for the dead, and it was this message which was represented by the oil that was in the lamps when the 10 virgins first went and waiting for the bridegroom to come. For the oil that was in the vessels of the 5 wise virgins must represent an additional truth, something other than what was in the lamps. It is this additional truth which is to supplement the 1844 truth, and this supplies sufficient light for the time of the coming of the bridegroom. And what must this additional truth be? It must be the present truth of the judgment for the living in the 12th parabolic hour of the last message. In this parable is seen great confusion when at last The virgins, all 10 of them, wake up and learn for a certainty that the bridegroom is on his way. Now, they all find themselves in the need of the light to illuminate the prevailing darkness about them and to light their way to meet the bridegroom. But to the utter and painful realization of the five foolish virgins who had failed to procure extra oil, truth of the judgment for the living, as the five wives did when it was time to do so, are now faced with a terrible darkness. Frantically, they make the painful appear to the five wise virgins that they share their oil with them. Now, they are fully awake to the fact that they had been mistaken in their belief that the message of the judgment for the dead was sufficient truth to carry them to the end. Do you not see that the old spirit of the prophecy should have already been in our hearts lamp, and in order to go through successfully to the coming of the bridegroom, we must also have in our possession and readily accessible to us the additional message mentioned in the early writings, page 277, the extra oil, the truth of the judgment for the living, the great and dreadful day of the Asher. Sister White did not have the seventh seal and the judgment for the living message there in that early writing that has been mentioned here. Let us say that now we have the extra oil, and those represented by the foolish virgin come to us and plead that we share the oil with them. Would any of us refuse to give it to them? I think we would not. But in the parable of the wise woman told the foolish woman to go and buy for themselves, for they had only enough oil for their own use. You know the sad story that the foolish were unable to go by the oil and get back before the door was closed. Who are those who sell the oil? And why would not the wise give unto the foolish? For the wise told the foolish to go and buy oil. Therefore the wise must also have had to buy theirs. For the extra oil being the additional message, the message of the judgment for the living, must have cost something to those who have it, and they must have paid something for it. Yes, we had to buy the oil, and we could not buy it from everybody. Many have asked who is eligible to lead in the service of the work. For the answer that goes out from Mount Carmel is that anyone not holding a certificate of the fellowship cannot be a Davidian teacher. He can listen only. Yet just the granting of a certificate of the fellowship is a cheap thing that in itself would have no significance. Who receives the certificate? Those who have personally studied all the message and believe it. Those overcoming temptation. Those who are complying with all the requirements. Those who put their treasure where the moth and the thieves cannot enter. Those who keep all the commandments. Those who are not flesh eaters, drunkards, or tobacco users. Those who do not rob Yahweh of the tithes and offerings, there it is, tithes and offerings. We would freely give a literature unto those who ask for it, but that does not give the light. It is only when one appropriates the oil the present truth unto his everyday living, that the all becomes transferred into the light. It is when one pays this price and thus becomes eligible for the receiving of a certificate signifying he has complied with all the requirements that he has to the light. Hence, though we can freely hand out tracts, we cannot freely hand out the certificate of fellowship. All the parables showed a different lesson. That is why there are so many parables. The one of the talents shows that we must work, for we are to double our talent. Studying and believing alone does not open the door. We must comply with all the requirements, pay the price, in other words, and we cannot steal the oil. Those desiring the certificate of the fellowship must pay the price. It does take time and effort, and the individual alone can determine how soon he can get the certificate, for it all depends on how soon he pays the price. We individually must watch and pray and be ready always, for we know not the day and hour of our personal visitation to have bestowed upon us Yahweh's mark and seal for the eternity. Therefore, be ready always. This brings us in verse 10. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. Number 11, click on our audio archives to hear this message and more. Now, let us close now.